This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Brett here today. Jam-packed. A former Democrat of the day, Anita Gall, is going to join us. That's from Senate District 15, is the district that she was in. She was running. We're going to talk to her because reality is that I got to give her some praise. And I'll save that here. Robert Baril is in town this weekend. He's got a show that's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. We are moments away from having Ilhan Omar join us. Ilhan Omar, of course, Representative of Minnesota 5 in the U.S. House of Representatives. She is going to be in-house with us to talk with in a few moments. Gives me a quick bit of time here to talk about, Trump's in court right now. He's in court. I don't know if he has a hamburger and ketchup with him, but he's in court right now. And yet he looks so happy. Oh, he looks like he's having the time of it. Summer in D.C., man. It's just good times, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure it's a great day for him.
Representative's here?
She is.
Well, great. We'll take a quick little break. Come on back. Representative Ilhan Omar, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Representing Minnesota's 5th District in the U.S. House of Representatives is Representative Ilhan Omar. She's kind enough to be in studio with me this afternoon. Representative, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, glad to be here with you.
Let's start off with what's going on as we speak. Donald Trump's in a courtroom, does not look like he's having a good day. Oh, it does not. He's being arraigned on his latest charges. But, I mean, if you've read, we've read through these are, he's trying to overthrow the government of the United States. Talk a little bit about this, because you've had a front row seat for this entire escapade, and here we are now finally seeing someone try to put some level of accountability on this man.
Yeah, I mean, we said that right after January 6th, that there needed to be accountability. And I think it's such a relief to see this case go forward, to see President Trump and his co-defendants be indicted for their role in January 6th. And I think it's also really telling, right, that he just continues to rack up these charges and that people in his orbit constantly get caught up in criminality. And I think it says something about the individual and it says something about the kind of country that we live in where a former president can be held to account.
They on January 6th, there were names that were being mentioned by the mob that was there. Mike Pence, you know, Nancy Pelosi, your name. People were calling specifically for violence against you. Now with these charges, we understand that was the goal, that these people were sent there to violently attack you if they got the chance. Yeah. That, I mean, for you, it's obviously we're protecting this country. But it's your own individualness that was specifically targeted by many of those people that were trying to storm the Capitol that day.
Yeah. I mean, I think what most people didn't realize is that, you know, this wasn't supposed to just be a nonviolent protest, a way in which people can share their disagreements in the way the elections went. This was supposed to cause intimidation. This was supposed to coerce certain members of Congress to act differently. This was to pressure the Vice President of the United States not to obey the Constitution and, you know, adhere to the oath that he took to protect and serve. I think, you know, I've talked about the fact that 6 months I had to have a protective service done by Capitol Police, where they followed me for 24 hours a day because there were credible death threats leading up to the election and after the election. January 6th, I was fortunate enough to have these individuals remove me from the premises and was taken in to a special place with the leadership of the House and the Senate. And I remember, you know, some of the leaders being confused why I was there. And one of the police one of the Capitol Police officers saying, you know, we couldn't trust that she wouldn't be personally harmed because there was no way for her to hide within the crowd. And for a lot of us, not only do we want retribution for, you know, what happened, we also want justice for ourselves and for every single person that was at the Capitol that day.
You are in a very different house, obviously, than you were last year. There was competency and things got done. I was truly an amazing first 2 years of the Biden administration with the Democratic House. Republicans have taken over. Not only do you have this entire clown car show of a Hunter Biden investigation, but they're not doing anything. They just basically seem to be, let's shut down the government today. You know, and it's to a point, I mean, there's a bit of a, as a person who's there to get things done, it's got to be a little bit exhausting to say, okay, are we going to do anything outside of basically natural disaster relief when we need it? Are we going to actually pass any bills?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just as an example, we were supposed to pass 12 appropriation bills before we went to recess, and we got one passed.
Yay!
and so if that track record, you know, remains, we are not going to be able to pass and fund the government, which I think for a lot of these really insane members of Congress is fine because they don't want the government to function. They don't want people to have continuation in receiving their Social Security checks, their disability checks, for veterans to receive their benefits. They don't even want the IRS to do its work. And you know, I do hope that we get to a place where, you know, McCarthy develops a backbone and a spine and stands up to these people and looks out for the country instead of just for his career and the dream of being a speaker. Because when you are sent as a representative of the people, you're supposed to do the work on behalf of the people.
He seems to be, that whole party seems to be betrothed to the extremist far right, the Lauren Boberts, the Chip Roys of the House that are out there just in kind of this bizarro land where they're like Twitter trolls come to life, where they're fascinated with their own press that they make for themselves. And, you know, there seems to be this idea that, oh, we should crash the government. There's a real call right now, a question of whether or not McCarthy, as you said, is going to get that spine and maybe work with Democrats to get a budget passed so that we don't shut down the government.
Yeah. I mean, when we were in the midst of the debt ceiling debate, a lot of them were saying they wanted us to default. And because of how long it took for us to figure out that conversation, which we eventually ended up avoiding a catastrophe, it cost our bond rating to be degraded. And, you know, I am worried that they are going to be thinking politically only and lead to a government shutdown in the hopes that they will mess up the economic recovery that Democrats have been focused on. You know, in those 2 years, the first 2 years of the Biden administration, we passed an infrastructure bill. Everybody talked about passing an infrastructure bill, but Democrats got it done.
Yes.
You know, we passed the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, historic investments in addressing the climate crisis. We passed the CHIPS Act, bringing back manufacturing to the country. There's so many, you know, the bipartisan gun violence prevention bill. There's so many really incredible policies that we passed that people are still waiting to feel its full impact, but it has really set us apart from the rest of the world, where many economies are still struggling while ours is in huge recovery mode.
the and we should mention the last time they did shut down the government under Ted Cruz and that crew, that it cost us billions. I mean, they're just to get things started back up again cost us billions. Mm-hmm. So there was no net gain. There was nothing. It was just basically a dog and pony show that ended up basically costing the American people more taxpayer dollars.
Exactly. And they didn't get a single thing.
And nothing.
That they wanted in causing that shutdown. I think it was the longest shutdown in the history of the United States. Right after I got sworn in, I think we were shut down for 35 days, which meant, you know, those of us who were sworn in to the 116th Congress didn't have the ability to actually provide constituent services for those 35 days. And mm-hmm. I think the impact isn't just, you know, whether the government will continue to do its job, but it's also whether your representatives will be able to provide the constituent services that you need when you are desperate for those services.
You see, and this is the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I talk to Democrats, and there's always this, you, Klobuchar, Tina Smith, you know, Dean Phillips. I'll talk to you guys, and it's, I'm here for my constituents. I've got a larger job here in the United States, but I'm also representing Minnesota, Minnesota 5, whatever the case may be. And the Republicans, their constituents don't seem to be anywhere on their radar in regards to what they're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Which is really odd because they call themselves constitutionalists, right? They will say they follow the founding fathers. They want things to be run. There's a reason we're called the House of Representatives. We're technically supposed to represent the interest of the people. The reason we run every 2 years is because we are supposed to be held accountable by our constituents. We're supposed to be the ones closest to addressing their needs. And the fact that these people only care about politics and not policy to alleviate some of the struggles that people are having is shocking to me. I mean, I don't understand how there's this mockery of the people that we represent by focusing on, you know, the pornographic photos of Hunter, a private citizen, right, who's had these pornographic images stolen, essentially, and now it's being viewed by the public. And that access is being provided by the House of Representatives. How gross that must be. And also to call themselves Christians but want to look at these images is just, it's so bizarre. I don't know what's happening.
As a Christian myself, I'll say, that's weird. And Marjorie, whatever you do in your own private house, that's fine. But this is a committee hearing. Please stop.
Yeah. exactly. Also, do not subject your staff.
Who got that job?
You know, exactly. Having to scroll through these photos to try to pick the most gross one.
I got a job for you here today. Let's see that copy over there. It's really large enlargements. Okay, no. Ilhan Omar, Representative Minnesota 5, kind enough to join us here today. I've heard from some Democrats who have talked about the Republicans and said the cameras are on and they're, you know, a howler monkey exhibit. They're just wild. But then you see them behind the scenes. They're interested. They're when the cameras are not on, they're asking questions. They're seeming to work things. Is that your experience, or does this clear disdain a lot of them have for you kind of continue even when the camera is not on?
No, it's actually the opposite.
Oh yeah.
So I'll give you an example. I sit on the House Budget Committee, and the conversations when we have a public hearing are just completely insane. You think we're talking about two different economies. We're, you know, talking about two different countries. we are talking about different sets of issues that Americans are facing and the ways in which we should address them. But when we are doing briefings, we're all together. There's no cameras. We're just having a conversation about different policies. It's more cordial. You know, people are more agreeable. There's a better discussion. And it's actually been really helpful for us on the Budget Committee to do less public hearings and to do more of the work behind the scenes, because we are actually able to have a sane conversation as opposed to the insane one that happens in front of the cameras. I think, you know, when C-SPAN was created, it was about bringing the people in and creating more transparency. But I think it sort of created a really sad incentive for people to put on their a performance hat and sort of audition in front of the public. And it's unfortunate.
One of the things I want to talk about as well is the you've been working on policy. We've had record heat across the country right now. Talk a little bit about that, because obviously I can't even comprehend Phoenix right now. I can't comprehend third-degree burns. You're sitting on the pavement.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting to the point where
you could fry an egg on the pavement as well.
It's uninhabitable areas. Yeah. We're going to get to this point, and not only is it affecting the population, but crops, water supplies. This is a real serious problem. What have you been working on there in D.C. to try to address this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest problem for us has been, looking at states like Texas, where they've passed legislation to say any protective ordinances that have been created, if they are not in line with the state policies, cannot be enforced. Mm. So that means for, folks in Texas, if you live in a municipality where they have created an ordinance that gives you breaks during peak heat season, if you're working outdoors to get as much break as you need to have water and to sit and to, be under shade, because we are human beings. We are not supposed to be, exposed to the sun in 116 degree weather, right? Mm-hmm. We look at what's happening in other countries. I remember when the World Cup was happening, everybody was talking about the working conditions in Qatar. Mm-hmm. We have that here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And Texas is just a glaring example of that. And so what we are trying to do is push OSHA to try to develop a nationwide policy in addressing work conditions when it comes to extreme weather.
Well, and I was in the military, and I went to a boot camp through Fort Jackson, South Carolina, in summer. Delightful, by the way. Yes, I lost a lot of weight just sweating that one out. But even back then, the military, for example, they knew water breaks. We're taking breaks and doing this. And there is this mentality. Texas is a great example of it. We're going to get rid of all these rules, and so a few people might die. I mean, we've had this happen where people have gotten heat stroke and they die, and they just don't seem to care. And I don't believe in a nanny state, but I also don't believe in allowing governors and state legislators to kill off their own people just out of spite.
But I also want people to understand we need work standards, right? That's not creating a nanny state.
Yeah.
We can't trust that every single business owner or corporation will be humane. We have to have certain standards that say, these are the number of hours somebody should be working. These are the number of hours that people should, be paid overtime. This is, the kind of safety regulations that you should have in this workplace. And for us to even be debating on whether somebody should be able to take a water break as they see fit, if they are working in a highway in Texas in 116 degree weather, it's insane to me.
Wow. Age requirements. We just had that here in the state of Minnesota, where we had kids working in meat processing plants underage. We just had a kid in Wisconsin pass away. He was, a lumber job, and he should not have been working on the equipment.
Yeah.
There does seem to be this element by these states to undo these laws, which are there for safety reasons, for a legitimate reason. It's not because someone just decided to make it up one day.
Yeah.
We have to do these things.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of regression that's happening in addressing some of these workers' rights issues is really appalling. I mean, we've got, states like Arkansas that are making it easier for people to hire underage workers. I'm grateful that we live in Minnesota, where our legislators actually actively work to protect children. But it is really unfortunate, some of the things that we're seeing. And that's why we have to fight for these nationwide policies and federal regulation in this regard. regard.
Water, speaking of summer, water, important here. Hastings, we have lakes we can't, and water bodies down there you can't take fish out of. Out in the West, we have nitrates levels so high in the water supply that we have warnings for kids and pregnant mothers not to be able to drink that water. Line 3 punctured a fourth aquifer up here. Mm-hmm. I'm glad the state Supreme Court knocked down that permit for the Polymet mine. Mm-hmm. But the reality is I think we have to step back and look at water, because clearly here in just Minnesota, we've got this great resource and it's going to waste in a lot of places right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's I remember leading a delegation out to Line 3 to oppose it, obviously. And one of the members in that delegation was Corey Bush of St. Louis, Missouri. And the Mississippi there, she's never been able to touch the water. Mm-hmm. And so she was, cheerfully wanting to get in and touch the water. She said she's never seen it that clean. That's what we have to preserve. Trying to make sure that this water that is creating the opportunity for people to have clean drinking water is sustained and it's protected. It's a huge asset for us here in Minnesota and for so many other states as well.
One final thing. How you slings and arrows. I mean slings and arrows. I get a bad hair with just a little radio show. What is your mentality to deal with clearly a large portion of the population that really just dislikes you, and no matter what you do, they're always going to send hate, send vile things? You seem to have such a great disposition still. I mean, that is really remarkable.
I mean, I'm entertained by the sort of hate that drives people to be like the first one to comment really bizarre things in everything that I post, that they have so much energy that they set up notifications just to like write the weirdest stuff. Or people who invest in having bots that do that to my social media posts. I want to live in a world where we care for one another and we're loving towards one another. And I think it's both entertaining and sad that these people exist, unfortunately. But I don't really care to feel any sort of way towards them, because I reserve my energy for the radical love that I want to spread, both in the policies I advocate for and the ways in which I show up in my community.
A master's class in taking lemons and turning it into lemonade. I mean, it really is. I really do enjoy the fact. I lost you, by the way. I lost you as my house rep. They moved my border like 3 blocks.
Oh, no.
So I'm with Dean now. Fine. I'll be with Dean.
Very unfortunate.
I was so happy. I'm so happy, first of all, you're in the Minnesota 5th. Yeah. I'm so happy you represent Minnesota. I'm so glad you're there.
Thank you.
It's an absolute privilege to be able to chat with you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time
today. Well, it's an honor and privilege to serve. So, and thank you for having me.
Representative from the Minnesota 5th Congressional District, Ilhan Omar, kind enough to join us today. We'll take a break. Come on back. Anita Gall is going to join us when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
There are men.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So last year, during the Democrat of the Day segments, I welcomed on our next guest, Senate District 15. She ran out there and she did not win, but we're going to talk about how important she was. Anita Gall is kind enough to join us in studio and chat with us. Hi, Anita.
Greetings, Matt. It's nice to be here in studio instead of calling it in from my home in Marshall.
Well, it is nice to have you here. And she brought me corn and honey. Love you.
Straight from the farm.
Love you. She brought me a big thing of honey. None for you, Brett.
You could share with him.
I could.
Yeah. Share with Matt.
I'll feed it to you like the scientist eats pudding. Okay, there you go. Here
okay,
you go.
Next time I'll bring 2. There's plenty of honey to share.
No, you don't have to bring some for you. Notice I never even mentioned the corn going to him. No, that's not going to happen. Oh, look at Brett's giving me. Put that in with HR, okay? Yeah. There you go. There's your HR complaint for the day. Thanks for coming on out. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
you, of course, I think DFLers, if you were in the metro area right now, what I think we need to understand is we are one party. And there's sometimes a tendency to focus on the city, sometimes focus on the suburbs. Reality is that the DFL, there is a very simple reason the DFL has control of the House, the Senate, and the governor's race. And that is because we ran people everywhere. And the Republicans could not take seats for granted, including your district, which was pretty beat red, right?
Sometimes I like to say it's so red it's crimson.
Okay.
Overall, I got 28% of the vote, but there were portions of the district that I was as low as 20.
Well, you as well though went out there and in speaking of the slings and arrows, that was hard because right now, and I think some of these districts, as you noticed, you know, you just go out there to do a parade and you're putting a target on yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I would say parades were the most hostile. There were some towns, you know, what they yell at you takes a lot of, it almost pierces the armor. It takes a lot of emotional armor, in a sense, mm-hmm. to put that on so that it doesn't break you, I guess, in a sense of walking a parade. And so that's why I was, you know, sitting here observing the interview with Representative Omar, and it was very inspiring because I know she fields so much criticism and verbal abuse, and
imagine.
She is so strong. And so someone like me watches her and thinks, how can I be that strong? You know, because I experienced that too, but I think on a far lesser scale than someone like Representative Omar.
I can't even comprehend. I mean, I really can't because, I mean, that is every day. It's like a Taylor Swift song. You know, it's 7 a.m. What are you doing yeah. already here? By the way, they didn't mention that the insults during the parades and the Jason Aldean song. That was never in there.
Yes. The smaller the town, the worse the insults, I'm going to say from experience.
Oof. Oh, wow. Yeah. But you are, let's talk a little bit about some of these issues out there because we need to focus on this. I was just reading a story out of St. Cloud Times this afternoon. I had lunch with this wonderful friend of mine. And then I basically went home and prepped the show. I had lunch with her. Anyway, so I was reading the story about the lack of daycare in St. Cloud in central Minnesota. Housing, daycare, these are becoming massive issues. They are major issues here in the cities. They're major issues. Well, maybe not as bad in the suburbs, but in rural Minnesota, these are, you know, economy and community crippling problems where they don't have affordable housing and they do not have daycare for people to be able to drop their kids off so they can go work.
Absolutely. Speaking from my own experience, and, you know, my children are old enough now where I don't need daycare. Mm-hmm. But when they still were in daycare, you know, you would think about maybe we'll have another one, and you first checked with your daycare provider. You know, will you be having an opening? You know, and I've also heard other people say like they determine whether or not they're going to have another child based on is there any place of open? Is there a spot open? And this is just as big of a problem in Greater Minnesota as it is here in the metro. And I will say, you know, there are communities that are getting creative. I don't know if you read the Star Tribune on Sunday, where they talked about Laverne in Rock County,
yeah.
which is in the far southwest corner, you know, touching South Dakota. And they have come up with an ingenious idea. They're creating a daycare center in that town through a partnership. You know, they're getting federal dollars, but there's mm-hmm. also community buy-in, donations. Mm-hmm. And they are working together because they realize if you don't have childcare, you can't attract a workforce. You know, mm-hmm. people can't go to work if you can't find someone to raise your kid or to not to raise your kids, but to watch your kids. So it's just as important out in Greater Minnesota as it is here in the metro.
Well, and it's becoming a bit of an awakening here because, and I'll say this, these people have been represented by Republicans forever, and Democrats, I know a lot of Democrats in the state that have tried to deal with the issues, Iron Range DFLers who have been trying to deal with the problem of daycare particularly. Is there ever a sticker shock more than that first kid when you take him into it? Oh my goodness, that scares you. But the reality is now the same people that they keep electing, they're the ones that are stopping any help from coming to these communities. And so now, you look down there, it's like they are going to the federal government. There is this understanding. It's like, well, we have this legitimate problem. And it doesn't do a person any good to have to drive 40 miles to the nearest town to drop off a kid, then drive 40 miles back just to work. I mean, gas costs, you know, time commitments, the stresses of it all. I'm of the mindset, I hope the state does at some point look into investing into some sort of maybe a state daycare system where it's something that's offered out there, kind of like I've said for the seniors in rural Minnesota, an expanding of the Metro Mobility Program statewide so that people can get to the grocery store and get to church and have no problems and still be able to live on their phone farms, which may be 3 or 4 miles out of town. I think that there are some common sense ideas that can be done. Maybe hopefully this next term, with still the DFL trifecta in the state, we might be able to get some of these things done. But they have to make sure you're looking at this practically, because this is stuff that's kind of really crippling rural Minnesota and forcing people to move out of the rural parts of the state.
I agree. And what's so frustrating is that our Republican representatives always say no to, they vote no to these programs and this funding that is going to help greater Minnesota, that will help invest in our communities and make it better. I call them a bunch of naysayers, right?
I call them a different term.
I call them naysayers. They're constantly saying no to these proposals and these bills, but they never offer anything, better or instead of, right? They just vote no. And I think what the DFL really needs to do now is just promote what we've done. Look at all the things the trifecta delivered.
Oh my goodness.
For greater Minnesota to make this not only to make your life better, your family's life better, our communities better. We've got money for infrastructure. We've got money for our law enforcement agencies.
Free school lunches.
We've got free school lunches, right? Oh. You don't always have to be checking your school lunch account oh my gosh, I got to put more money into that, right?
By the way, how much is that per year? It's $500 here in the suburbs per year per kid. Is that the same price?
That's about ballpark for them. About the same.
Hey, Republicans, good luck on trying to repeal that one.
Right. I know. And so I think the DFL just needs to constantly be promoting this, trumpeting from the rooftops. Look at all that we've done to help rural communities. Mm. And, maybe we can get a few people, in the next 3 years, might change their vote, right? The next DFL candidate can get more than 28%.
It's kind of one of those things where you just have to keep hammering that home. I've actually of the mindset, I think that in every town in outstate Minnesota, the DFL should be putting billboards up saying, we did this. DFL did this, not the Republicans. And I don't care how brutal it is. I don't care if you're afraid the billboards are getting vandalized. If you don't go out there and trumpet what you have done for these people, then because I guarantee the Republicans are already taking credit for the bills they voted against. And that's the crazy part. But the Republicans, they'll sit there and they'll vilify teachers and then have the sincere earnestness to come on out and say, why doesn't anybody want to teach in the school district? I don't know, Johnny Jenkins. I've got a suggestion. It might be you. But they are not helping. I'll give you another one that might not be necessarily direct to you, but deer hunters and stuff, and of course a lot of deer hunters out in your area, chronic wasting disease. Ohio had to cancel their entire hunting season because chronic wasting disease was that bad. We know this is a problem. And the last session, the Republicans refused to do anything to help. This is hunting season, for goodness sakes. You're not helping. You're only getting in the way of things. And, there are way too many Republicans in this state who don't want to be a representative or senator. They want to be an internet troll. And that, I think, is what's really causing problems. And I think this is kind of the dynamic they're having to deal with, is because people, I think, turn to the DFL because the reality is the other side's just not there. And I know your district was really red, but the reality is we still have a trifecta in the state. And a lot of that has to do with you. I'll get back to that here in a second. But people just, you're not doing anything. Stop it. Help. And the contrast here this year, as you said, that is a laundry list. And on top of what Representative Omar put out there, that infrastructure bill, I guarantee you within 10 miles, 20 miles of everyone's house, there is a project on that in that bill that's getting done. That's
amazing. Absolutely. I've driven a lot of the summer around Minnesota, and everywhere there is road construction, which is a little frustrating right now, but I have to keep reminding myself, this is making better roads, and I will be so grateful once this is done.
Water treatment plant in Marshall, you guys got a good one out there now?
We got a good one right now, but I know, for example, with our DFL trifecta, they have gotten a lot more funding for our rural water systems.
Good.
So the Red Rock water system, the Lincoln Pipestone Lincoln water system. So there, and the city of Tyler got money for their water treatment plant. So they're, you know, they have done so many good things for our local communities. I just, it's our job. And I know I speak as now as the Lyon County DFL chair. We had this giant banner made up for our fair. So at the fair, we have this giant banner. What have Minnesota Democrats done for you? And it just lists, like, I think we've got like 20 different things on there. So we're there. We're promoting it. We're trumpeting it as much as we can.
Well, and I think the state party needs to get out there and help you guys a lot more because, you know, you need to, you know, we're on the side of the people in these districts. The Republicans aren't. That's just that clear. Anita Gall is joining us right now. Lyon County DFL chair. Hello there. Okay. Yeah. I buried the lead. First of all, how's summer going out there? I mean, for you, you've been traveling around a lot, but I mean, what are you seeing out in rural Minnesota right now?
Well, I will say from where I'm at, we're dry. I think most like everywhere in Minnesota could sure use some rain. I hear maybe Saturday we might get some rain, but you can really tell that the crops are looking quite stressed. Things are getting a little dire, so everyone put out a good word and hope for some rain.
Are you at the point now? I mean, obviously, I imagine some are into the watering of it there. I mean, that's very costly, very expensive to pull that off. It's kind of one of those things. Are they having to bring in the watering programs now on this?
Well, there's very little irrigation in Southwest Minnesota. Generally, you know, we get enough rainfall that it's not necessary. Once you get more into Central Minnesota is when you start seeing the irrigation happening. So right now we're just hoping for a good rain shower.
the status of the farmer out there is has it been, you know, since we last talked, I mean, is the outlook for the farmer out there looking better in your mind?
I think so. You know, farming is always if land prices are so high right now and input costs are so high. But when you're in farming, it's always a difficult business. I know my brother took over the family farm about 5 years ago, and you know he's a diversified farmer. He raises natural hogs, grass-fed beef. He has bees. He has sheep. So because he has a diversified income, he's making a go of it. He's terribly busy though. The other day he calls him, I'm like, I don't know, I just work so hard, I never have time to do anything. I'm like, well, it's that and you got four little kids. So
that's it. When you do have time, it's already booked. Is it when you do that, and just for the layman person that's listening to you right now, when you have a diversified farm like that, and you are dealing with specialized product, do you get a better payday? I mean, a lot of times with farmers, it's, you know, you take it to the elevator, you're getting the bushel price, you know, you get one big check and you kind of that stretches through the year. When you're doing it as he is, I mean, is it one of those things where you're getting a little more you know, spacing between paydays if you're getting a payday? I mean, is it a better system, do you think?
Well, it's, you don't have all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah,
it's a diversified income stream, right? So if pork prices are down, you know, hopefully wheat prices are up. Or because he doesn't raise just corn and soybeans, he does a lot of small grains as well. So with a diversified income stream like that, you know, you can sort of mitigate your risk a little bit, and you don't have all your eggs in one basket, right? So that if the price of beef is low, you're like, oh my word, how am I going to make it through this year? You know, hopefully some other income stream is doing all right. So, you know, he is fortunate in that he has a strong enough farm where he is making a livable income. His wife is able to stay home, and they have four little kids, so she's busy. but they make a go of it. But yeah, it is a lot of work, but I'm immensely proud of him because he's dedicated to the land. He's keeping the family farm alive, and he's carrying on, you know, the farm that he is. Inherited from my father, and he's doing a great job.
And good for him. And it's an easy story to like. It is an easy story to like. It's salt of the earth. It is. It's not a Jason Aldean story. It's your brother. It's people going out there and working the farm and doing what they can to get by, and then hanging out with the kids. And yes, I'm sorry. So we need to maybe do a fundraiser for a vacation for him. Maybe we do that, something like that.
Maybe just a little time off. He's usually just so tired. It is summer. It is the peak season. Yeah.
We'll have a nice bed someplace out in the woods and quiet.
Yeah, exactly. Probably just needs a little peace and quiet. Yeah.
One last issue. Specifically about the rural Minnesota broadband, is it getting better out there?
It is getting better, and with the state and the federal dollars coming in, I think it's going to get even better, which is about time, because just because we live out in Greater Minnesota doesn't mean we need good, strong, reliable, fast speed internet. Everybody needs it to do business. So
it's medical, it's educational, mm-hmm. it's farming,
exactly.
It's everything. I'm going to, if I may. I want every DFLer right now to listen to me right now. You know why we have all three controlling bodies of the legislative branch, including the executive branch and the governor's office. We have that because of people like Anita. When you run DFLers in every district, even the beat red ones, they are forced to spend money in those districts. They're forced to put volunteers out in those districts. Wisconsin has had problems. You know why? Because they don't run Democrats in all their districts, and it shows, because it puts extra pressure on the toss-up districts, because Republicans are going to just put tons of money into those districts. What Anita did was go on out there into an area where she put a target on herself just by saying, I'm a Democrat, I'm a DFLer, I'm running for this office. And she put up with it, and she ran, and you lost. But because you did this, we all won. That's just the reality. We owe you and every DFLer that ran out in rural Minnesota a huge round of applause, because this would not have happened without you. And if we forget that, then shame on us, because you are the reason why the DFL in Minnesota is a shining star in this country right now. And I am eternally grateful all you've done. You have been magnificent.
Wow, I don't know what I'm going to do with all this. Maybe I could do my part, because what the trifecta has delivered this session is just, it's wonderful. You know, as Governor Wall said, I'm an island of decency, right? An island of, and proud to live in this island of decency.
You come back anytime. Anytime you want. Well, you don't have to bring honey and corn. You don't. Mm. You know, other products. Now, tell me all he does.
I'm going to say, there might be other things that I could bring you from the farm, you know? They've got a freezer full of meat.
So. This is how you get me wrapped around your little finger. Anita Gall, the chair of the Lyon County DFL and last year's Senate District 15 candidate. Anytime you want to come back. You're an absolute hero, and I adore you. Thank you for all you've done for the state of Minnesota.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I love when I can mail it in for a day. God, what an hour, man. What a freaking hour of radio, man. This
is only getting better, isn't it, next hour?
Well, not really. I mean, hold on there, Brad. Okay. Whoa. It's for real, man. Robert Barilla is in town. We're going to chat with him about 4:35. He's been all over the place, man. He was playing St. Louis. He was headlining in St. Louis for a while. He's, you know, I proudest punch of the kid, man. I can call him kid because I'm an old man now. But, oh, man. Barilla, fantastic. He's joining us coming up here. And, of course, spotlighting both of those interviews, you can listen to Representative Ilhan Omar and Anita Gall at your leisure. Just head on over to your favorite podcast site and podcast away, my friends. So I want to read you. This is Scott McFarlane. He does CBS News. He's at the Trump trial. I want to just read this. I haven't read this. I'm just going to go through this because apparently things were delayed a little bit. So Trump is in the courtroom. I want to lay the scene here. Trump is, hello, I'm Donald E. Should I sign an autograph for the judge? I don't know if he did that.
Hopefully it's like a plea agreement instead.
Oh, God. Insanity. Insanity, Your Honor.
Sure, Mr. Trump, you can sign an autograph for me.
X, I didn't know you were a fan of Twitter. Anyway, Scott McFarlane from CBS News. I'm just reading through his Twitter feed right now because this is pretty precious. DC police officer. Well, this is actually, how about this? DC police officer Daniel Hodges, who was crushed in the door by the rioters by the Capitol attack, he arrived at the courthouse for today's hearing. Also, retired Sergeant Aquino Gunnell, who is also there. The initial appearance in the felony case of former U.S. president is running late. Judge has not entered yet. Trump must sit and wait Trump is fidgety. I mean, when's the last time has anyone made him sit idle and wait? Nearly 20 minutes and counting for Trump in that black rolling chair, no defense table, no judge yet. Judge enters the courtroom. The judge entered the courtroom 5 minutes later. Trump shifts his body to face judge. Ugh. Thomas Windham and Molly Gaston are representing the special counsel. Gaston presented the indictment of the grand jury on Tuesday. Judge calls him Mr. Trump. In Florida, federal judge used title of former President Trump. Judge begins by reminding all the courthouse not to record any images or photos. Phones are off in the courtroom itself. Trump stands, raises his right hand, takes the oath. Hello, I'm Donnie T. Who needs an autograph? Judge again calling him Mr. Trump. God, that's got to just undergrade him. Says she will arraign Trump today and consider any conditions for Trump's release. And now the judge gets called Trump, sir. Sir, are these your curly fries, sir? Trump tells judge his name is Donald J. Trump. John is the J. I don't know if he said that. She asks his age. Trump says 77. Trump is making no use of pen or paper nearby. Does he ever? Trump's hands are clasped on his lap. He's leaning forward, almost hunched. Judge warns Trump, anything he says can be used against him in future proceedings. He says yes. Judge explains Trump that he can't afford a lawyer. One could be provided for him. I imagine he thought about that for a second. More on this one, return hour two up next. Hour two of the show here on your Thursday. Can you imagine the personal hell it must be for Marjorie Taylor Greene's personal assistant?
I need you to blow up this image. Check it for imperfections. Oh.
She is a disturbed woman.
But as Representative Omar said, you know, you get these people in when the cameras are off and they're actually, you know, they'll work together on things.
It is interesting. By the way, quickly, finishing up with Scott McFarland's play-by-play. Trump pled not guilty. Prosecutors will not seek detention of Trump. Darn it. First hearing before the judge is scheduled for August 28th at 10 a.m. Of the three dates that were offered, the Trump defense chose the latest one, the 28th. Defense tells judge, defense for Trump might need more time to get an understanding of the magnitude of discovery and the degree in which there's exculpatory evidence. Hearing ends. They're going to try to push it off till after the election. It doesn't sound like, you know, as people have said, there's no reason to push this off until after the election. They have more than enough time to get this in even before primaries. So it's going to be interesting to see them try to argue you're rushing this. And my guess is going to be is the Trump administration is going to try to, the Trump crew is going to try to argue that they have to put it off. They have to put it off, and they'll probably take it to the Supreme Court. But I imagine the Supreme Court will say, no, you're going to go to trial. Or maybe they will. Maybe that's going to be a payoff for the Republicans. And we'll have to see. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Good news to start our day here, Brett, or start our second hour, I should say. Now, do you eat the pickles at the pickle stand right as you come in the entrance, the main entrance there, right by the grandstand?
Generally, no. No.
No. What's wrong with you, man? You don't eat those pickles?
Not right at the grandstand like that, no.
Well, not at the grandstand. You know the pickle stand that's got the pickle chips there? You're not a big fan of those? Which one do you go get? Do you get a pickle?
Yeah, I'll get the pickles. Yeah, yeah. I'm just not going to eat it right away.
Well, of course you eat it right away. If you got to eat something as soon as you hit the door, if you're going to stage yourself for the day there, you know, that's just a gimme. Good news, they're adding a second stand.
Where is it?
The perfect pickle, which plies. Oh, for goodness sakes. The perfect pickle, which plies their trade on distinctive trailer on Dan Patch and Liggett, will open a second location. This year's Minnesota State Fair, the vendor has shared a picture showing a new purpose-built stand that will be located in the north end of the fairgrounds. Well, it's by the Little Farms hand exhibit. God, there used to be nothing up there. Remember when they opened up that stretch north of Machinery Hill? It was kind of almost like there was nothing there, and now that thing is packed. They moved the pets up there,
and they've got the Twins were up there for a while. I don't know. I think the Twins have moved over by International Market Square or International Bazaar, the International Bazaar, by the Horticulture Building. But they, what else was up there? They got the thing. They got the karaoke thing. You know that karaoke stand where you can go sing along with the music? I'm there every year. Of course. Who doesn't love ABBA? I who doesn't love ABBA? Now you grab some fried pickles before you head to the Giant Sing-Along to visit the pups at the Pet Expo or on your way to the Lumberjack Show and the other fun activities on the North End. It just gives me, you know, you've spread them out perfectly so I can go get pickles when I come in. By the time I get up there, I'll get more pickles. It's perfect.
That does kind of work out.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Some karaoke, maybe some lumberjack.
Well, what you do, wait a second here. It just dawned on me. We got the gondola rides, right? Or the ski ride. The gondola rides go from the Horticulture Building over to behind the pickle stand. But on the other side of the grandstand is the ski ride that runs all the way to the north side there. So all you do is pick up your pickles, start eating your pickles, get on the ski ride, take it all the way to the north side, get off the ski ride, more pickles. Genius. Genius. This whole pickle fiasco that they're doing right now, this all this stuff with the pickles, it's got to be a good pickle. If you don't have a good pickle, don't waste my time. You're just teasing me at this point. That's a cucumber that's you know, not developing. Stop it. So there you go. Good stuff at the fair. Finishing touches are being placed on the company's new venue with signage coming soon. Next week, our original trailer will roll into place if it posted on Wednesday. We're looking forward. That's a trailer? That whole building is a trailer down there by the Skyway ride? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I did want to make sure, since I did bring in Ilhan Omar, I did want to mention members of Congress jetted off for an August recess without a plan in place to avoid a partial government shutdown when the new fiscal year begins October 1st. Lawmakers who write the spending bills acknowledge that it's a real possibility, giving deep divisions. The stalemate stems from a split among House Republicans on how much the government should spend and whether the bills should be filled with far-right policy objectives. We're in a difficult spot right now. I regret that we're here, said Arkansas GOP Representative Steve Womack, told reporters about the House Republicans' division before the recess. We have an entire 4 or 5 weeks now to think about it, and maybe cooler heads will prevail. No, they won't. No, they won't. Cooler heads will not prevail. If anything, Marjorie Taylor Greene is probably freebasing roids right now and, you know, trying to come up with even a more extreme. We'll have a public beheading of a liberal every day. Seriously. They're not going to calm our heads. No, they're not going to hear that. The Speaker Kevin McCarthy, a California Republican, and President Joe Biden struck an agreement on spending levels back in May when they brokered the debt limit deal. Though the House has written its dozen government spending bills significantly below those levels and loaded the bills up with social policy riders that couldn't pass a standalone legislation. But that hasn't appeased some hardline conservatives who argue the party should force a government shutdown to move the bills even further to the right. You're not going to force the Senate and the presidency to do this. You guys did this once before. Ilhan Omar talked about it, that you basically shut things down. It was the longest government shutdown in history. And it ended up costing taxpayers, I think it was somewhere around $60 billion in additional costs. $60 billion. As Republicans patted themselves on the back as they thought they had done something, we sent a message. Yeah, the message is you're freaking idiots. That's what the message you sent. This is a bad idea. It is a really stupid idea. And I, you know, frankly, it doesn't surprise me. And at some point, you just got to wonder, and I guarantee it's going to be next year, especially in like Nancy Mace, who's she really is a Republican in a Democratic district. I know her district. That's Beaufort, South Carolina. I've been down there numerous times. It's a more Democratic district. And she can't win by basically being Marjorie Taylor Greene light.
So at some point, she's going to have to find something where she can say, I'm not with them. I'm an independent thinker. And hope that it comes back to help her. The reality is until she feels as if it's detrimental to her reelection chances, she is not going to go along with the side of sanity. I mean, like I said, this is the woman. Nancy Mace is the person that the Republicans put forward as their moderate, and at times she sounds just like a Lauren Boebert. There's no moderate left in this party. I don't know where they think they're going to go. I don't know where they think they're going to succeed with, but good luck. It goes into the larger question of that Republicans are horrible. They are. Now, I'm going to take a few minutes here, if I may. Do you know how there are all these Republicans? There's like, they're all horrible. I'm moving to Florida. You know, I've heard that. You know, they hear things such as free school lunch and more healthcare access, and they say, I want to have basically worse services for higher costs. I'm going to a Republican state. And that's, if I'm lying, I'm dying, man. You're right. They don't tax you. So you don't lose $100 out of your taxes to pay for things like roads and schools and stuff. Instead, they make you pay $4,000 to $5,000 to have a private company do it. Not as good as the government could do it anyway. But hey, progress? Anyway, that's Republicans. And they look at Florida because Florida is Ron DeSantis, Florida, Texas. They don't really say Arizona anymore. But they say Florida a lot. Florida's really doing great right now.
Wasn't the original DeSantis slogan, Make America Florida?
Make America Florida. Did the first question...
What happened to that slogan?
It got eaten by a meth gator. It's currently running down Interstate 95 high as hell on bath salts. That's what it's doing right now. Clawing at a raccoon, fighting over a half-eaten hot dog. Welcome to Florida. And it's humid, just FYI, in case you haven't been. You don't need those sweaters anymore. Just 2 months after the NAACP issued a formal travel advisory for Florida, warning visitors that the state has become openly hostile towards African Americans under Governor Ron DeSantis, or as I will ever forever call him, Meatball Ron. I don't agree. Donald Trump hasn't done damn thing right outside of call Ron DeSantis Meatball Ron.
Well, and he stopped too. I don't know. That was like the one good nickname he had.
That was, man. That's I wish I could come up with something that good. Meatball Ron. Two major black organizations are moving their annual multimillion-dollar conferences elsewhere. Now advocates hope the momentum for the relocations translates into real change that affects the ballot box in 2024. It is our hope that the outcry and loss of revenue will force legislators to repeal the terrible bills that were passed in the fat last few years, said Melba Pearson, the Miami-based civil rights and criminal law attorney. We hope that voters will make solid decisions in the upcoming elections based on knowing the impacts these negative laws have on their neighbors, friends, and communities. Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, the country's oldest and largest intercollegiate black fraternity, and the National Society of Black Engineers, one of the largest student government organizations based in the United States, have decided to move their conferences that were scheduled to be in Florida in 2025 and 2024, respectively, to other states, causing potential hostile environment for their members. Alpha Phi Alpha, which was founded in 1906 and boasts a membership of more than 200,000 members and 700 chapters around the world, last week said that due to DeSantis's harmful, racist, and insensitive policies against the black community, the organization would find a new home for its 119th anniversary convention that was slated for Orlando in 2025. The group says the event was expected to generate $4.6 million in economic impact. The National Society of Black Engineers, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary, similarly decided after much deliberation that Florida did not offer its members enough safety and an ideal membership experience to be the setting for such a milestone event. We made the decision that the environment in Florida is not the backdrop we want for that 50th annual convention, said Avery Lane, national chair of the organization, which reports having more than 18,000 members and nearly 800 chapters worldwide, said Yahoo News. So, you have two major, especially the Alpha Phi Alpha. I mean, that's huge. 200,000 members, 700 chapters. That is a major event. That's no longer going to be in Orlando. I have a friend, and I sent them a message. I have not heard. They said that their event, they were slated to have an event, I think it was in Tampa, and they said it's gotten changed now, and they're complaining because they had to change plane tickets, but to Vegas, that they moved their event there. There was an event they were going to do there, and they moved to Vegas because Vegas is ready. Vegas right now could handle any event, and you know will. It's hard. Yesterday, there was a story the Orlando Magic ownership actually was giving money to Ron DeSantis. And what they said is, now this is the Orlando Magic, an NBA team. And this is, it comes into light because, of course, is Ron DeSantis out there saying that slavery was good for black people. That, you know, they learned skills. That, no, they were forced to work hard manual labor. They were forced to work hard manual labor. It wasn't like freaking a job training program, for God's sakes, you idiots. You freaking racist idiots, my God. And here is the Orlando Magic. And this just tells you the success of this you better or else mentality from the Republican Party down there. Here you are in Orlando. Orlando is freaking Disney. They have already decided to, there were jobs that were going to transfer to Orlando. They've actually pulled those back. They're going to keep those in other areas. You know, Orlando, Disney and Orlando has already started saying they're going to start pulling back on things there. You are the Orlando Magic. You're a basketball team there. For goodness sakes, your own, I don't even know what the hell you're thinking. But now they're trying to say, well, we do. This was before he said those things about slavery. And by the way, it does sound like both of these two organizations that canceled their conferences were also before he said this about slavery. It's not going well for Ron DeSantis. So you're saying you're a right-wing Republican and you're saying, big deal, Matt. So two things are not going to happen there. That means it's going to be cheaper for someone else to go in there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let me make sure I say, we're just at the beginning of the wonderful news for Florida. It sucks to be in Florida right now. It really does. We'll explain that more here in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Brett, do you have to, in your existence, do you have to pay homeowner's insurance or anything like that for your property?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay, okay. I'm somewhere around, I think, like 14, you know, it's something like two, you know, like $1,400 to $1,600, I think, for a year for me, for our home. There. Do you know how much you pay for a year?
I do. Yes.
How much? Just get ready.
I'm not sharing it on the airwaves. Not going through my personal file.
Well, so, I mean, is it less than $1,000 or over $1,000?
No, it's less. It's less. Yeah. I'm just. Yeah.
Well,
I'm just
for, like, you don't have to say that. You're right. I mean, that's wrong on me.
No, I'm just. No, it's less.
What's your waist size? Right? Yeah. What's your hemline? All right, no. I'm just putting this in perspective for us because I think you and I are kind of normal people, right? I mean, I live in Hopkins. You live in the metro area. I'm fairly normal people. You're a little less than $1,000. I'm about mid 1,500, somewhere around there. All right. When it was time for Winter Garden, Florida retiree. Sue Mayer, 69, to renew her homeowner's insurance this year. Her carrier informed her that it was hiking her annual premium already at $3,800 per year by $2,000.
I can tell you, I have not faced an increase of that.
No, that's 50. It's almost $6,000 a year for her insurance in Florida. You got to be kidding. I kind of freaked out when I got the letter, she says, said Sue. She's not the only Florida reeling from this costly insurance. The average homeowner's insurance premium in Florida has increased 100% over the past 3 years. The average cost is approximately, the average cost, you ready? The average cost in Florida is $6,000 per year. That's the average. More than triple the national average, says the Insurance Information Institute. Florida homeowners may see average premiums reach $9,000 next year. Experts say the insurance for properties near the coast rig can easily top $100,000.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not an expert on the Florida insurance system, but don't you need like separate insurance too, specifically to cover some of these natural disasters rather than just your typical, you know, homeowners?
I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, you have to have wind insurance, you have to have flooding insurance, you have to have hurricane insurance. I mean, you have to have the whole gamut. And these guys clearly don't have the whole gamut. That's nuts. If you live in the coast. So once again, all you people saying, oh, I hate it here, it's so much cheaper in Florida. We'll let that be a surprise. We'll let the $6,000, you say. That was four times what I was paying in Minneapolis. Yes, it was. And if they even pay it out, because let's face it, aren't they down there doing that? It's like, yeah, we can't pay for your damage.
That's what I would think too. Like, oh, you didn't cross your T's cross your T's and all that stuff.
They'll find some way to throw you off. Yeah. Miami, which is also, by the way, another story about Florida. Miami, which is a hot spot for crypto kings and tech bros. really is seeing a come down of late. Really? People are leaving a town that's been invaded by crypto kings and tech bros, you say. Wow. Couldn't be running fast enough from the city, you say. Okay. Despite Florida's boom, which helped become the fastest growing state between 2021 and 2022, Miami-Dade County has been losing more residents than it's been gaining in recent years. Between 2019 and 2022, Miami-Dade County's population shrank resulted in the first population decline over a multi-year period since 1970, said the Wall Street Journal, reporting data from the Federal Reserve Bank in St. Louis. The recent decline is all more significant given the fact that the country's population nearly doubled, according to the data there. Between 2020 and 2022, the county also lost close to 80,000 people through net migration, with people leaving for other parts of Florida or other states altogether. While unemployment rates in Miami are among the lowest in the country, the area's housing surge. Apparently, it costs insane amount of money to live in the Miami area. The median home value in Miami is $550,000. Wow. Home prices in Miami have surged by 53% since June of 2020. The city has the highest share of U.S. of cost burden renters, or renters that are spending 30% or more on household income on rent. Wow. About 61% of those in Miami rent market fall into this category. 61% of people renting property in Florida are paying more than 30% of their total income in rent. God. The median income for the county is about $57,815, according to the data, which is last collected in 2017 to 2021. So, yeah, that's not good. The Democratic Party nationally on July 31st put out this nice little tweet. Florida now has the highest inflation rate in the U.S. While Ron DeSantis is fighting his culture wars, millions of Floridians are losing their health care. Florida is taking sick kids off of Medicaid months before planned. Florida insurance premiums have soared 206% since DeSantis became governor. Florida is the least affordable place in the United States to live. And the fine folks at the Minnesota DFL did add on. Average rent in Florida is $2,396. The average rent in Minnesota is, that's all of Florida. That's all of Florida. The average rent is $2,396. The average rent in Minneapolis is $1,660. That's it. Actually, in Minneapolis, there we go. The inflation rate is 6.9% down there. It's 1.8% up here. And in Texas, good news, you can always have your power go out during a heat wave and be told you need to pay $4 million to get your air conditioning back on. Or even better, have someone have access to your home thermostat and turn your AC up to 92 and say, not much you can do about it. Go. No, seriously, go. No, 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 no. You hate it here. You hate it in Minnesota. Oh, it's just a burden. You need to go to Florida. Go, 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 conservatives. Go show us. Show us. Put us in our place. Put us in our place, Republicans. Put us in our place. Off you go. I'm sure you'll be so much happier not having benefits and services and paying everything you got. Go. No, 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 no. Or stop your whining, you sniveling little twits. It's one of the two. I'll let you pick. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Robert Burrill, kind enough to join us as he is going to be in town playing some comedy this weekend. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Robert Burrill is comedian extraordinaire. He is going to be at the Laugh Camp Comedy Bar coming up here on Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. both days this week. He's kind enough to step. We're going to have him on the air next week, too, just because it's Burrill and he makes me laugh. Hey, Robert, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Matt. Yourself?
I'm doing well. You were headlining in St. Louis the last time I saw. That was not that long ago, was it?
No, that was last weekend. I was doing the one of the funny bones they have out there.
How did it go?
Great. It went great. I mean, I've done enough political comedy in enough clubs where I can read a room, and I have enough for both sides, too. I have Biden jokes and stuff like that. And so there's like a formula I have, too, where I kind of open with and then I also have some RFK Jr. stuff that's been going really well.
Well,
so
I mean, that's...
I can balance that out later on.
That's called low-hanging fruit, my friend. I mean, my God, that guy's a bag of cats.
But, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Missouri, but low-hanging fruit is the only kind that some of those people will consume. So you need to... do what you can.
St. Louis that's a pretty democratic town though, still, isn't it? Kansas City is kind of they're their Jekyll and Hyde town over there. They got a real far right element to it, but they got a lot of, you know, I think just because they got good barbecue that kind of mellows them a little bit. But St. Louis is kind of, it's more on the left, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine. A lot of my new material is just kind of issue focused, so I'm not really like coming at it from a partisan lens as much as we can all agree this is ridiculous, like the Michelangelo's David thing, the book banning, stuff like that, where I'm not targeting Ron. Well, no one needs to target Ron DeSantis. He's doing enough job of torpedoing himself. But it's not like I'm going after specific Republican candidates. It's just like picking some of the crazier policies and ridiculing those, and that goes over a lot better.
No one has walked on stage in those white boots, dude. You need to do that one show. Come on out in the Ron DeSantis white boots. It would be beautiful. If I can ask you, because you just brought up something that I find to be fascinating, because you make me laugh. I think you're one of the funniest human beings I've ever heard in my entire life. I have all of his albums. Everyone should have his albums. They're fantastic. Having watched your career kind of blow up here, and you're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Do you notice that your comedy writing is changing? I mean, you start off, a comedian seems to start off with kind of more simple one-liners, and then you kind of got into more political jokes. But now, are you starting to notice that you're kind of getting in more of that, you know, kind of larger concept, you know, comedy that you see a lot of the comedians that are successful starting to do more and more of?
I will say that I think my writing has gotten much more thorough in that while I still do the occasional one-liner, I think if it's more of a bit that's political or topical or something like that, I think I've gotten a lot better at digging deeper beneath the initial jokes to find a more interesting or edgy or compelling kind of a through line or a nice like thought pattern to follow through that ends up being probably a bit more controversial. But I've developed as a writer, I think I've also developed more as a performer to kind of have the courage to not be afraid to lose some of the audience by saying something that I might not even believe, just doing it ironically to kind of provoke them and stuff and just to get a reaction. And one of the things I think is missing from comedy is just like the ability or willingness to just do something a little outrageous for the sake of like, okay, yeah, like, it's no fun if I go up here and I just say stuff that everybody agrees with, because then it's like, what are we doing? So yeah. It's fun to kind of like poke and prod him a little bit. And I'm a big fan of Bill Burr, and I know he does that a lot too, where he'll go off on a rant for 6 or 7 minutes, and then like the next 7 minutes just completely contradicts everything he just said. Like, yeah, but I could see. And so the more I've done it, the more I've learned that you're a lot more successful if instead of, you know, going up there and saying, well, this is the right answer, you just go up there and go like, well, we can all agree this isn't the answer. And it's a much more unifying approach, regardless of what the individual audience member's political beliefs are.
Does it make for better writing? And obviously there's a writer's strike going on right now that is out there. But when the strike is
over, in Jimmy Fallon's case, isn't a bad thing. I certainly miss Kimmel and Colbert, but I mean, Fallon, that is not a gaping hole I need filled anytime soon, is the lack of Jimmy Fallon content.
Have you noticed, because what you described there, I mean, it's kind of the genesis of, a comedy writer for films or movies and stuff like this. Have you done much of that? Have you thought about doing something like that? I mean, if you're getting to the point where you're writing out comedy material you are doing right now, I think the next logical step would be writing for TV, writing for a movie or something.
Yeah, I've written some spec scripts and some pilots and stuff, and haven't heard back. And I stand up really spoils you because of that instant gratification, where if I think of a joke during the day, I can go to an open mic or one of my shows, and then like I just know, like, okay, is there something there? Is there not? Whereas with a longer work, much more of a commitment, like a TV show or a movie or a novel or short story or something like that, I write it down, but then it's like, well, is this anything? And I'm definitely not ruling out doing it in the future. But right now I'm just kind of enjoying where the stand-up writing is taking me.
Well, and it's, a lot of other people are too, because you are going across the country. I'll ask you, just as someone who's doing a lot of travel, I used to do business travel, which is not what you're doing per se. I mean, not saying you're not doing business, but you know, having to carry stuff and go to meetings and stuff, not fun. But you get to go do the travel here. So have you been able to explore much of the towns you're going to, or is it kind of one of those things where you get in, you go out, do the shows, and that's pretty much it?
It really depends on how long I'm in town for. So the St. Louis clubs are nice, the Funny Bones, because that's a Thursday through Sunday.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll get in Wednesday, and then I have plenty of time to see the sights and stuff during the day and do the shows at night. But if it's just a quick turnaround, if it's a Friday, Saturday, or sometimes just a Saturday, then oftentimes it's just a matter of like getting there, getting to the hotel, doing the show, coming back, passing out, getting up and leaving. So more often than not, it's usually at least 2 or 3 days. So I might try to split the difference and just go see one or two cool things if I have more than a day. But I try not to overdo it, because I'll need energy for the shows.
Well, and obviously, because that's exhausting. I do this job. I mean, and as much as it, I mean, this crap fest, you know, I do this, but I mean, it's 2 hours and I'm tired afterwards. I'm not in front of a live audience. That is when we used to do the state fair shows. I remember, and you did a state fair show with me one time. I remember getting done with mm-hmm. that and doing those. And I felt this felt like I did 4 shows in one show. I mean, doing a live thing is can wipe you out.
Yeah, that, and then the fact that it's like 100 degrees out every day now, the second you step outside the door, it is even more exhausting without, you know, doing any kind of exercise or physical activity.
Just, St. Louis is
breathing and existing out there.
St. Louis is nasty. St. Louis yeah. is nasty hot, man.
Yeah, I mostly just stayed in the hotel and watched baseball games on the TV, but yeah, you can't even venture. Even like times where you think, okay, maybe it'll be a little bit cooler, like 5 or 6 o'clock. Nope, 96.
96, and it's just humid, and yeah. Oh no,
they tried to convince me one time to do a bike trip on that train line that they run from, you know, I wasn't going to do the whole thing because I'm not insane, but it was from St. Louis to Kansas City. There's a train line that they've converted into a state line thing.
Oh, man.
And they wanted me to do this thing and go to wineries and do this thing. And I said, well, what do you want to do this? I said, July. I said, not in a freaking million years. Are you crazy? I
mean, to wineries? To wineries. To dehydrate yourself?
You could, I mean, it's like, is this trying to kill me? I mean, it's, you know, 100 degree bike days and then you stop in for some Pinot Noir while I pass out. Has there been something where you have been able to go out and visit it and you're like, okay, this is cool. I'm glad. I mean, obviously St. Louis, you get the arch there, but in any of these towns that you've been in, was there a park? Was there an attraction that you went there and it's like, okay, yeah, this, I need to come back to this. This was good.
Well, so I was in St. Louis last week doing the Funny Bone, but the week before that, I was just doing like a little vacation with my family, seeing different ballparks and stuff, and we drove through Springfield, and I saw the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and Library, and that was really cool. Okay. That was, in fact, even afterward, we were just talking, we all kind of agreed, my mom, my dad, my brother, and I, like, we saw four baseball games, we saw the Braves play, they were on the road, they were playing Milwaukee, the Cubs and Cardinals, all these teams were like, nah, but that Lincoln, the Lincoln Library and Museum, it was just so cool. They really take you through his life, and there's this exhibit where it's the Emancipation Proclamation, and they have the statue of Lincoln, and the proclamation's like in front of him, and as you walk through it, they have these different layers of like transparent glass or whatever, but it's like images of people's faces on them, and they're all talking at the same time, all saying whether or not he should do it, and giving the different reasons. So it's pretty overwhelming because it like really puts you inside his head of just hearing like, no, you can't do it. It's going to, you know, we still want to patch things up with the South. Yes, you have to do it right now. You should have done it yesterday. And they're all talking at the same time. And it's pretty powerful.
Well, you know, it's that because I'll give you another one, Gettysburg. I mean, Gettysburg is worth the price of admission. Yeah. If you get that, you don't need to do the tour. You just get the audio tour that you can just buy at their gift shop, put it in your car, or get it on your iPod now. I just dated myself. Anyway, get your 8-track out and pop it on in, and you'll take you around to all the sites, and it's good. But at the same time, we know who we're rooting for there. It's like, you know.
Yeah, we can all agree who the bad guys were for that one, at least most of us, I think. But
well, the Republican Party seems to be a little bit more conflicted, but at the same time, no, there are these gems out there, like you said, and that's one nice thing, too, and it's very cool that you went and did that with your family because, I mean, there is a lot of America. We think sometimes just of the big cities, New York, going to L.A., something like that, but the reality is in a lot of towns across the country, there's a lot of real cool things that you should try to make time to go see.
Oh, yeah, because I'm such a political dork, the presidential museums are something that's always on my checklist if I'm remotely in the area. I did a club in Grand Rapids, Michigan a few years ago, and that was the Gerald Ford one, which was, I mean, considering his presidency was only like a year and a half or something, it was still pretty cool. And I mean, it doesn't matter how little time you spend as president, there's, you know, everybody's got firsts and things that I mean, not getting indicted three times and impeached twice or whatever. That's, he's in a category all his own, but even somebody like Gerald Ford, where you think, what is this, just like a closet with a football jersey in it? There's still some cool stuff in there.
Well, you just made up a good point. So Trump's library, what is it going to be? Is it going to be a statue made of hamburgers, and then all the voices are going to come in, and it's just going to be the judges saying, how do you plead?
Yeah, he's collecting indictments like Pokemon at this point, I think. He started with Pornysaur. That was the Stormy Daniels one. And then Spizard, I think, at Mar-a-Lago. And now Riety Poo. Like, I think he's caught them all, I think. Well, Georgia, he's still got to get that one. But I think he'll get it.
Yeah, he's going to be getting that one pretty soon. Is that one going to be in Mar-a-Lago? It's got to be. He can't put that in New York. It'd be, you know, egged every day. He's got to have to put it down in Mar-a-Lago.
I mean, I'm waiting. Someone's got to put out a Trump tour shirt for next year with all of his court dates and stuff on there, right? Like, someone's got to make that. Just seems like great liberal merch is, you know, coming to a courthouse near you, Giuliani's opening for him. You know, the Eras tour. during like Taylor Swift.
Oh, God.
Except he takes money from truckers. He doesn't give them money like Taylor. He needs them for his defense fund.
Did you read? I'm hesitant to go down this path, but did you read the transcript of Giuliani's tapes, that of his sex tapes?
I just saw some before you called, skimming a little bit. I didn't go in depth, but even just a glance was like, oh man, that's all right. He said the word boobs a lot, right?
Yes,
like, that's not who does dirty talk and still uses boobs.
I think isn't he the governor from Blazing Saddles? Isn't he the Melbourne?
Yeah. Like, even his dirty talk just sounds like a teacher from the four, like, hey, you boobs, get to class. Like, it isn't even sexual, it doesn't seem like.
Well, and it's also in that high-pitched Giuliani, boobs! You know, he's just like, oh, yeah, I'm aroused.
It's unbelievable. Like, did we reach this point as a country where you have a former president that's got, like, four different trials going on next, and it's still probably going to get the nomination? Oh.
Well, and at the same time, the Republicans, I mean, you have this, I mean, pretty much everything he's been charged with, he freely has admitted doing, for goodness sakes. And yet the Republicans are saying, here's another naked picture of Hunter Biden. It's like,
for a party, for as homophobic a party as they seem to be, they definitely don't mind passing around nude photos of Hunter.
Well, we had a Representative Omar on last hour, right? And she said, can you imagine the poor, you know, assistant in Marjorie Taylor Greene's office that got that job for the day? I need you to blow up some images for me.
Yeah, the statue of Michelangelo's David, that's pornography, but a nude photo of Hunter Biden, well, we can pass that around. That's just good political satire.
That's a Christmas card right there, yeah. Happy
hurting
holidays.
Anybody. Yeah. It's funny how Biden gets more corrupt with each new Trump indictment, right? Like, that's how they can't pick a way to go after him, because at first it was like, oh, he's a vegetable. Well, he's clearly not. He's outwitted you on most budget stuff. And then it's like, okay, well, is he a vegetable, or is he like the most devious crime lord in history that no one can get anything on? Like, you can't be both of those.
Well, and they've gotten to so pathetic with him, is now they're attacking him. Look at him. He's laying on a beach on a vacation. And you're like, really? This is your grand attack? Oh, he ate a different kind of ice cream. How dare he? They're so desperate to turn anything in there, because they realize that this appeal of the indictments is going to last. I think by the time we get to next year, I think Trump, I'm not saying he's going to fade. He's always going to have his fan base. But I don't think it's going to necessarily nearly be the selling point they think it is come election time next year.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I'd like it, I don't envision him spending any time in prison. I mean, if he does, that's great. But I feel like he's so much more toxic in a general election than he is in the primaries, obviously, because it's not just Republicans that are deciding it, where I would like to think that it won't be as close as it was in 2020, if indeed we get the Biden-Trump rematch. That no one seems like, it reminds me of that The Dark Knight quote, where it's like, it's not the rematch we want, but it is the rematch we deserve as a country. Like, we don't deserve any better than this. I mean, this is who we have. And Trump, he's running away with the nomination. Every indictment, he just gets stronger. And it's going to be real fun in the debates when Chris Christie is the only one who's actually going to attack him, which makes everyone else on that stage race to come to his defense. And then it's like, well, what are we doing here?
I got to tell you, we had a moment when I was up at the cabin. We had everyone together. We were having a few drinks. I put on Not the Time, your album from 2022. We listened to it and laughing our cabooses off, man. Beautiful stuff.
Aw, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Well, I got a bunch of new stuff for anyone that has heard the albums. It'll be different stuff at Laugh Camp this weekend.
So you're at Laugh Camp this weekend. It's tomorrow and on Saturday, 8 p.m. I'll put the links out there. It's camp-bar.net is where you'll find the information about that. I'll put all the links out there. And Robert, you're coming back next week, right?
Yeah, I got some more shows next week as well in the Twin Cities area. So I'll be on next week to plug those with you as well.
All right, Laugh Camp tomorrow and on Saturday. Robert Baril there. Robert, as always, my friend, you're welcome back anytime. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, okay?
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt. I'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Robert Baril, I could make him a weekly. Easy. The Pokemon names, man. We'll take a break, come on back. And wrap up the show for a Thursday. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Once again, Laugh Camp for Baril. That is on tomorrow night and on Saturday night, 8 p.m. both nights. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It is pretty remarkable, and we haven't got to what many people think is the easiest case against him, which is the Georgia case. That the Georgia case is him basically saying, I need you to cheat, 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 cheat. I love cheaters. I'm paraphrasing, but not by much. I'm not paraphrasing by much. Cheaters are the greatest. I love them. Wow. Wow. Anyway, yeah, it's we are in a time here. I mean, one of the things I didn't get a chance to talk to Ilhan Omar about is that this is a time in this country's history which in 100 years, in 200 years, in 300 years, we are going to have people who just study the basically post-Obama era in American politics. And the president that tried to overthrow the country. I mean, Rachel Maddow had an exceptional little piece where she talked about this was a violent attempt to overthrow. They wanted to send the military in to take over our cities. Really scary stuff. It is remarkable. Anyway, more on this to come because the charges keep rolling on in. So I am off tomorrow. I am off on Monday. I'll be back on Tuesday. Todd Mickelson, our good friend Todd, is going to be filling in both those days, correct?
That is correct.
All right. It's, you know, this is the thing. It's, I can leave you. Todd's fantastic. So you're going to get, you know, probably a better show than I get. Let's be honest with it. Have you listened to this? Todd Mickelson in tomorrow. Todd Mickelson in on Monday. I am back on Tuesday. Have a fantastic weekend wherever you are. Native Roots Radio, I'm awake. That crew is up next. Have a good one. Till Tuesday. See ya.